Chapter 19. On Becoming a Stoic. Start now, and prepare to be mocked. Practicing Stoicism won't be easy. It will take effort, for example, to practice negative visualization, and practicing self-denial will take more effort still. It will take both effort and willpower to abandon our old goals, such as the attainment of fame and fortune, and replace them with a new goal, namely, the attainment of tranquility. Some people, on hearing that it would take effort on their part to practice a philosophy of life, will immediately dismiss the idea. The Stoics would respond to this rejection by pointing out that although it indeed takes effort to practice Stoicism, it will require considerably more effort not to practice it. Along these lines, Musonius observes, as we have seen, that the time and energy people expend on illicit love affairs far outweighs the time and energy it would take them, as practicing Stoics, to develop the self-control required to avoid such affairs. Musonius goes on to suggest that we would also be better off if, instead of working hard to become wealthy, we trained ourselves to be satisfied with what we have. If instead of seeking fame, we overcame our craving for the admiration of others. If instead of spending time scheming to harm someone we envy, we spent that time overcoming our feelings of envy. And if, instead of knocking ourselves out, trying to become popular, we worked to maintain and improve our relationships with those we knew to be true friends. More generally, having a philosophy of life, whether it be Stoicism or some other philosophy, can dramatically simplify everyday living. If you have a philosophy of life, decision-making is relatively straightforward. When choosing between the options life offers, you simply choose the one most likely to help you attain the goals set forth by your philosophy of life. In the absence of a philosophy of life, though, even relatively simple choices can degenerate into meaning-of-life crises. It is, after all, hard to know what to choose when you aren't really sure what you want. The most important reason for adopting a philosophy of life, though, is that if we lack one, there is a danger that we will mislive, that we will spend our life pursuing goals that aren't worth attaining, or will pursue worthwhile goals in a foolish manner, and will therefore fail to attain them. Anyone wishing to become a Stoic should do so unobtrusively. This is because those who hear of your conversion to Stoicism will likely mock you. You can avoid this sort of harassment, though, by keeping a low philosophical profile and practicing what might be called stealth Stoicism. You should have as your model Socrates, who kept such a low profile that people would come to him, not realizing that he himself was a philosopher, and ask whether he could introduce them to any philosophers. Socrates was, Epictetus reminds us, tolerant of being overlooked, and those practicing Stoicism should likewise be tolerant. Why do people behave this way? Why do they mock someone for adopting a philosophy of life? In part because by adopting one, whether it be Stoicism or some rival philosophy, a person is demonstrating that he has different values than they do. They might therefore infer that he thinks their values are somehow mistaken, which is something people don't want to hear. Furthermore, by adopting a philosophy of life, he is, in effect, challenging them to do something they are probably reluctant to do. Reflect on their life and how they are living it. If these people can get the convert to abandon his philosophy of life, the implied challenge will vanish, and so they set about mocking him in an attempt to make him rejoin the unreflecting masses. What will be our reward for practicing Stoicism? According to the Stoics, we can hope to become more virtuous, in the ancient sense of the word. We will also, they say, experience fewer negative emotions, such as anger, grief, disappointment, and anxiety. And because of this, we will enjoy a degree of tranquility that previously would have been unattainable. Along with avoiding negative emotions, we will increase our chances of experiencing one particularly significant positive emotion, delight in the world around us. For most people, experiencing delight requires a change in circumstances. They might, for example, have to acquire a new consumer gadget. Stoics, in contrast, can experience delight without any such change. Because they practice negative visualization, they will deeply appreciate the things they already have. Furthermore, for most people, the delight they experience will be somewhat clouded by the fear that they will lose the source of their delight. Stoics, however, have a three-part strategy for minimizing this fear or avoiding it altogether. To begin with, they will do their best to enjoy things that can't be taken from them, most notably their character. Along these lines, consider Marcus's comment that if we fall victim to a catastrophe, we can still take delight in the fact that it has not, because of the character we possess, made us bitter. Furthermore, as they are enjoying things that can be taken from them, the Stoics, as we have seen, are not averse to doing this, they will simultaneously be preparing for the loss of those things. In particular, as part of our practice of negative visualization, say the Stoics, we need to keep in mind that it is a lucky accident that we are enjoying whatever it is we are enjoying, that our enjoyment of it might end abruptly, and that we might never be able to enjoy it again. We need, in other words, to learn how to enjoy things without feeling entitled to them and without clinging to them. Finally, the Stoics are careful to avoid becoming connoisseurs in the worst sense of the word. Becoming, that is, individuals who are incapable of taking delight in anything but the best. As a result, they will be capable of enjoying a wide range of easily obtainable things. They will keep firmly in mind Seneca's comment that although to have whatsoever he wishes is in no man's power, it is in every man's power not to wish for what he has not, but cheerfully to employ what comes to him. Thus, if life should snatch one source of delight from them, Stoics will quickly find another to take its place. Stoic enjoyment, unlike that of a connoisseur, is eminently transferable. Along these lines, remember that when Seneca and Musonius were banished to islands, rather than succumbing to depression, they set about studying their new environment. Because they have learned to enjoy things that are easily obtainable, or that can't be taken from them, Stoics will find much in life to enjoy. They might, as a result, discover that they enjoy being the person they are, living the life they are living, in the universe they happen to inhabit. This, I should add, is no small accomplishment. Stoics might also find that besides enjoying things in life, they enjoy the mere fact of being alive. They experience, in other words, joy itself. The Stoic sage will apparently be able to experience this joy all the time. Those of us whose practice of Stoicism is less than perfect will not. Instead, the joy we experience can best be described as intermittent. It will, nevertheless, be significantly greater than the joy we had previously known. Again, no small accomplishment. When should we begin our practice of Stoicism? Epictetus makes the case for starting immediately. We are no longer children, he says, and yet we procrastinate. Keep this up, and we will one day realize that we have grown old without having acquired a philosophy of life, and that, as a result, we have wasted our life. Practicing Stoicism, he adds, is like training for the Olympics, but with one important difference. Whereas the Olympic contests for which we might train will be held at some future date, the contest that is our life has already begun. Consequently, we do not have the luxury of postponing our training. We must start it this very day.